Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. Today on the podcast, I have a little bit of a different episode for you. And we're not really talking too much about the business of yoga in this episode, but it is a really interesting episode, so don't turn it off. I've got Lara Benousis here, and she is from New York City, and she's been a yoga teacher for about 20 years now and has been immersed in the world of movement and yoga basically her entire life. And she shares her story of how she got into yoga and why she became a yoga teacher, so I won't share that bit. But I will tell you that she taught yoga in a cancer center for a number of years, and now she is studying at Columbia University, doing her master's, studying the effects of yoga on cancer patients. So she's very, very knowledgeable. She has a lot of inspirational information to share, and it's more of a conversation around what she does and sort of how to get into this world of teaching yoga to people who are sick as opposed to people who are healthy and strong and athletic. So I really hope that you enjoy this episode. I thought that Lara was extremely fascinating to talk to. And without further ado, here she is. Thanks so much for coming on the show today, Lara. It's really awesome to have you here with me.
Hi.
And you're joining me from New York today?
Yes. I live in New York City and I teach yoga here.
Very cool. Can you tell me about how you got into yoga?
Well, it's a pretty long story, so I don't know if we should get too much into it, but I was introduced to yoga when I was 3 years old. My mother had a recommendation from her physician that she should try practicing yoga to manage a chronic disease. And thank goodness it helped her, and it helped her through managing and lowering some of her symptoms that I think she could have possibly gotten. And as I was growing up, I would join my mom with during her practice early in the morning, and some of my earliest memories are practicing tree pose and walking on my knees in lotus.
Wow, that's amazing.
Then when I was in college, after my freshman year, I decided to get a certification, and this was years ago, so this is in 96. So this year is actually my 20th anniversary of getting of being a certified yoga teacher, and I've been a teacher ever since I got certified. And at that time, there were really only three or four options in the world to have a certification, and I chose to go that route as opposed to just to begin teaching.
Yeah. It's so crazy to think about a world where there was only like a couple teacher trainings, because there's hundreds of them now.
It is. And at that time, it seemed like it was already saturated. That it did seem like there was already a lot of yoga that was being offered. And I've since reunited with several people from my graduating class, and we've talked about that. And I've been through the lineage of the evolution of how yoga has evolved from it being more of, I guess, a sort of a religious model in terms of the business. And then now it's really a business. There's so many different ways that you can earn a living being able to participate in yoga and sharing yoga with the population.
Yeah, definitely. And so in terms of your career, did you start with teaching in classes and doing that with something on the side, or were you a full-time yoga teacher right away, or how did that work for you?
Well, I grew up with someone, you know, my mother has multiple sclerosis. And so I grew up with this acute awareness of this disease and how it could at any time, basically take her movement away from her. Like, she could end up in a wheelchair, and we were aware of that and educated by her doctors and also, you know, in family meetings and such about the unknown progression of the disease. And so my mother really took charge of her illness by changing our diets. She, you know, we were almost completely vegetarian. We ate whole grain. We were, I think, the only family that ate carob. And then, you know, she meditated every day, twice a day. She still does. And she practiced yoga. And luckily, one of the physicians, the neurologist, said to her at that time, there was no evidence on the effectiveness of any of those things, but they said that they had seen in their practice that people respond really well and tend to lessen the progression of the disease. So growing up, knowing that at any time, you know, my mother's movement could be taken from her, her ability to control her body, I think that that inspired me to really take charge of my own ability to move. And so I trained as a professional dancer, and I went to North Carolina School of the Arts for high school. And then I went to SUNY Purchase for my undergraduate degree in dance. So I was training at a very rigorous level of how to be a professional dancer. And yoga really coincided with that. So, you know, I was exposed to yoga at a very early age, and I read, you know, the books in the bookshelf. There was really only about 5 or 6 books in the yoga section when I was growing up. And then I also followed along to Richard Hittleman's yoga video. And I really grew up practicing yoga. I used to practice after dinner, which is probably the worst time to practice because I would have a full stomach.
Yeah.
And I would do his video almost religiously for a number of years, about 4 or 5 years, while I was also studying dance. And I found it to be such a really wonderful way of being with movement and breath. And I learned so much with having sort of that inner, I don't know, conversation that we all have when we do our personal practice.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really cool background, a really cool story. I don't think I've talked to anyone through the podcast who's been introduced to yoga at such a young age and had such a cool upbringing with it. So that's really, really amazing to hear.
It's really special. You know, also I think something that might be interesting to the podcast audience that you have, I was born and raised in South Dakota, and so my father worked for the Indian Health Service. So I was also exposed to that culture as well out there. And so this idea of spirituality was something that was, and Native American spirituality specifically, was something that I was aware of and had exposure to. And I think that's influenced my sort of viewpoint on both the spiritual essence that's in the undercurrent of the yoga practice, but also in terms of my own sort of belief system. And I don't really share so much of that because that's not most of my focus with my community and my students, but it is something that is really personal and I think influences me on a larger scale than what I even communicate.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really special thing. And so at what point did you become interested in yoga and the cancer population?
Well, when I first started teaching, I remember thinking I was so glad I was working with healthy people, and I never ever wanted to work with anyone who had a chronic illness because I think I didn't feel I had the tools to be present with them or to facilitate what would help them in the yoga practice or the asanas, you know, being that they're so physical and some of them are so intense. And that was really in my early 20s when I started to teach really full time. And that was right around 9/11 that I started to teach full on, like, you know, 20 hours or more a week. Mm-hmm. And really started to make my living in New York City as a yoga teacher was during that time. And I remember thinking that. And then I was also dancing professionally in projects and also in Europe, and I was pushing my body to such extreme levels that I think that I enjoyed also being able to share some of the more subtle ways of movement through yoga in my classes that you can experience through movement. But, you know, yoga has like a different framework than, you know, dancing professionally. Mm-hmm. So I developed an injury that was my first and my last injury that I had as a dancer, and that was a hip injury. So I had a basically like a movement that I was doing in this one choreographer's company, and I knew the moment that I injured my hip. And so I danced on it for about 2 years after that. And then I went in and I decided to have the surgery, which I then also used it as a time to end my career or transition away from dancing professionally and touring. And so that experience of having to go through a major surgery on a weight-bearing injury and then learning how to heal myself through physical therapy, I think was really eye-opening. And I gained a lot of insight into the patience that's required in healing the body. And it allowed me to have the empathy, I believe, to work with a more chronic disease population. And I did begin to work with multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease first before I got headhunted to join the program at this major cancer center. So I wasn't even looking for this job. I was after my dance career, teaching full time and sort of wondering what the next step would be. And I was also studying with John Friend in the Anusara community and learning a lot of the therapeutics that came out of that lineage and really enjoying that work. And then one of the program managers for this major hospital came and took my class, and she saw how I worked with people who had these chronic diseases. And she then invited me to join the team.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was actually like the right time for so many things. So this was in 2009. Okay. That happened, just to give you guys a little bit of a timeline there. So I had been teaching for many, many years. I've been just teaching a lot and, you know, being with people's bodies and being with their evolution. And, you know, and so many of my students would go through, my private clients would go through a lot of challenges physically. And I would, you know, yoga was something that they sought out to help themselves through those challenges. But being recruited to join this team then allowed me the opportunity to strengthen my skills and apply them to this population. So the first population I worked with was a sort of an outpatient, you know, people in after rehab medicine would come, and it was a group class. It was a small group class. And then I was invited to teach a group of survivors of childhood brain tumors. So it was neurological, which I was familiar with, how to work with people with those types of restrictions. And I just got really curious, and I began to read as much as I could, and there was very little out there. And I also had such a great relationship with so many of the nurses and the doctors that I was working with that I asked a lot of questions and then began to look at, you know, who was teaching maybe programs or trainings that I could then learn from and develop some skills. So one of the first trainings that I chose was to go and listen to Dr. Basil van der Kolk. I think his name's Basil, but I still call it Basil because it looks like Basil.
Yeah,
but yeah, he teaches. So he's an MD, and he's been working with post-traumatic stress disorder. And I thought that it was interesting to hear him talk, in that it allowed me to understand like some of the transference and countertransference that happen in the relationship that we have as yoga teachers to these people that have, who are going through, you know, post-traumatic stress, disorder like situations, which cancer you can possibly classify in that, depending on the person. And so his presentations and lectures were just really wonderful. And also that he has a daughter who's a yoga teacher. And so he had also been using yoga in his clinical work, I think probably influenced by her. And she's also a dancer and, you know, part of this group of movers that I think are very curious in this generation of looking at all these different ways that we, you know, that movement helps us to facilitate, different parts of ourselves. Like, you know, it's just a very exciting time, I think, to be in this whole industry and this whole field. And so his training was great. And then I also took a number of like anatomy and, you know, I'd already had a lot of pre-med anatomy and, but I just looked at all these different resources that I could strengthen my skill set with.
Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible. Do you have any recommendations for somebody who's like, wow, this sounds really cool, but I have no idea how to, you know, even begin working with somebody who is dealing with a chronic disease or, you know, cancer or something like that?
Let's see, recommendations. I mean, so I teach, I teach teachers. I have been teaching teachers in Japan, primarily. Yeah. So I've been going there, since 2009, also twice a year. And I'm preparing for my next round of teaching, and the next round is going to be kind of insane. So I'm going to be teaching in 4 cities in Japan in this next trip. And I do basically like post 500 hour specialized trainings, where it's all about special populations. So I do a children's yoga training, but it's looking at like motor development and, stages of development. So it's not like just teaching children yoga. It's much more complex. And we go into a lot of, different angles of how to work with children. And also because I was a child growing up practicing yoga, I have my own direct experience, to communicate and to help them develop some of their own lesson plans. And then one of the other programs that I'll be teaching this time for the first time ever is this is a one-day event, but how to work with cancer patients. So I know that I'm going to probably have a lot of students in that group that are new teachers. I personally believe that you have to develop a really strong eye for observation as a new teacher. Mm-hmm. I think I'm old school in that I was, you know, part of this generation. We didn't have YouTube. We didn't have a lot of source material, or, you know, meaning that nothing was published. And there really wasn't any use of the internet at that time for yoga teachers. You know, just to give you some historical content here, I remember the only videos you could find on yoga were laughing yoga.
Wow.
It was like there were no other videos available on YouTube at all in 2006. So, you know, I'm part of this generation where we just learn directly from each other and from teachers and from whatever written material was available to us. And so that allowed me to strengthen a lot of observations. I just watched people. I watched how they breathed. I watched how they responded. And then in the years that I've gotten the opportunity to work with a lot of my students, like even tonight, I'm teaching just a group class, and so many of my students have been with me for 10 years. I've gotten the chance to see their bodies change and adapt and grow with the practice. So I would recommend for most new teachers to strengthen those observation skills, because observation is actually the first level of research. And then to continue to surround yourself with the top teachers that you possibly can. So when I was a dancer, I studied under Dick Kutch and Dick Gain, and those were the top teachers that they were at North Carolina School of the Arts that you could study with in the world. And then I studied with Kazuko Hirabayashi, who is also renowned as like one of the top teachers. And so I just, you know, and I studied with Julio Horvath in gyrotonics and gyrokinesis. He's the founder of it. And I studied with Elaine Summers, who is the original founder of all the ball work that we now have. And she did kinetic awareness. And then I studied eidokinesiology. So I just studied a lot. And I studied it with as many people as I could. Another thing that I problem solved for myself when I was young as a teacher and also just graduating from college, as a dancer, I would dance, but also I would, I didn't have a lot of money because my job was dancing. So I luckily made some very good relationships with people at Kripalu. And at this time you could actually go up to Kripalu and assist. And so during the summers before, like I would sublet my apartment in New York, I would do like the dance festivals, at ADF in Durham, and, you know, maybe go on tour for like a small project with one of the companies that I was dancing with. And then I would do as many, assist as many programs as possible at Kripalu. And there I assisted, I think, 35 programs in 10 years. And it was great. I would even go out for the weekends and just assist.
Wow.
So I got to assist all of these major teachers in the beginning of their careers. So I assisted Shiva Ray, I assisted Baron Baptiste, I assisted Bikram, his wife and him, and then I assisted David Swenson and Krishna Das. So it's like all of these people, and this was really in the beginning. So I just trailed for years. And then there was one studio that I just absolutely adored taking classes at. It was Bhava down on the Lower East Side in Alphabet City. And I think it's now Yoga Sanctuary is in that building. But the founder of this studio was from the Jiva Mukti group. And he opened up his own studio, and he was famous for giving hands-on assists. And so I studied under him, and I made a deal with him where I could assist, and then I could get a free class. So every class I assisted did hands-on assists, then I would get granted credit with a free class. And so those types of opportunities were just so valuable to me. And so I would practice and then study and then learn from all of these people.
Yeah. That's just such a cool journey. It's so cool to hear about that. I love how you've just continuously learned, because I think that something that I really want people to know when they come out of a teacher training, and that I'm constantly reminding myself, is that you're barely skimming the surface when you do a 200 hour, and there's so much more to learn about people and the body and the practice of yoga. And it's really cool to hear that you've just been continuously learning throughout your career.
It's amazing. You know, I mean, this is my 20th year of teaching. So this August, I think it's like August 3rd or 4th is my actual date that I graduated from that program. And time has really flown by. I'm so grateful that I can make my living teaching. I love it. It's a practice that, you know, whenever I take classes or I practice regularly, I always feel like it just works.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing. And now I'm, you know, a researcher of this, and I'm a student of physiology, and I am just fascinated by how much we can't quantify of why yoga is effective. And yet I think we should still continue to, you know, develop good questions and within our practice and within our community of how we're doing what we're doing. And as more and more bodies are doing it, I think we're going to learn a lot more about what we should maybe lay off from doing, and then what we should continue to do, and how yoga evolves during your life and what your needs are in terms of what's good for you. It changes. So the recommendations that we make about yoga are not applicable across the board. It really is determinant of who it is that's practicing. For someone who's really conditioned and has a tremendous amount of capacity in their physical fitness, like doing a lot of those chaturangas is probably feels really good in their body, versus someone who's at a desk job and, you know, has had a like low activity level for the last 10 years, you know, it's like those tendons are not conditioned to handle that stress. And so that, you know, that would be contraindicated to do an Ashtanga practice for that person versus someone who's, you know, has a certain amount of conditioning. So it's really complicated, I think, how we will look at yoga in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's evolved a lot just even in the last like 10 or so years. I feel like it's changed so much. The industry's changed a lot.
There's a lot more information sharing, which has facilitated, I think, a broader stream of communication about the practice. You know, people are sharing so much information when before it was really coveted by the teachers. You had to study with them. Or I don't know if coveted is the right word. There was a certain amount of secrecy to some of the practices, and for good reason. But, you know, it was just, you had to just study with them. And there is that transmitted from an actual teacher that, you know, is indescribable, and you can't get from their books. You get from really just sitting in the room with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you've got a bunch of knowledge about something, I definitely understand that you don't want to just like put it out there for free if that's how you're kind of making your living. So I feel like that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and in terms of like recommending, like a lot of beginners, so when I was a manager of this program in this cancer center, I would get tons of resumes, and they would always be people who'd like been teaching 1 or 2 years, and, you know, they had a relative, you know, who had gone through it. And it was so heartwarming that there were so many people who were interested in serving and who saw the value of practicing yoga for this population. But I also was really hesitant to, you know, to even continue the conversation until they've had a number of years under their belt, because I do think that it's important that someone strengthen their abilities to teach, their skills to communicate, and then also their own practice before they work with a population that's as complex as someone who's going through cancer. And we can talk a little bit about what I mean by that too, if you're interested.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to hear more about that.
Well, I mean, so I'm some, just to backtrack a little bit. So I'm right now, I just finished the requirements for my master's degree in physiology at Columbia University. And now I'm moving into the next level of my degree program. And so I'm studying in this totally different camp of experts, where when I was working at the Cancer Center, I was first invited to teach classes, outpatient classes, and then, you know, teach special populations. And then I started teaching the employee classes. And then I got invited to do more inpatient work, and I started with the pediatric population, and then I worked in the adults. And at one time, I was like the main yoga teacher running the whole show and working 60 hours a week, and it was crazy. Yeah. And developing content for them. So we do have this program that I was a part of, and some of it is that my chief really saw the potential of, you know, who I was and my level of interest, and also of willingness to continue to study and learn about this population. She elevated me to the role of manager of the program, and then, you know, working with developing content that would, you know, then help with the research efforts. And so my first study I worked on was working with COPD, which is a form of chronic dyspnea that occurs with the lungs, and it was with the pulmonary department. And then the next study was a biomarker study of writing the intervention programs for an ovarian and breast cancer study that was 12 weeks in length, and it was 3 times a week of classes of comparing gentle yoga and vigorous yoga. And so I got really interested in research, and then I decided to go into this program where I wanted to understand why the observations I've been making about seeing patients doing better who were, you know, studying either private yoga sessions with me or in my group classes, and how they were having less, there were lessening of symptoms, or even people that I was working with, you know, all the way to the severity of like end of life and ICU, and how they were responding to even just a small amount of stimuli of their own movement and of some of these yoga practices. And so I was fascinated to learn about more of the physiology of what was really happening, what happens when we move, what happens when we exercise. And so I'm now studying really applied physiology. It's exercise physiology, and physiology is a branch of human biology that seeks to understand the mechanisms of the cells and organs and hormones and other biological systems that basically keep the body alive. But it's this interaction of these systems, as well as the complex adaptations of the stress and recovery of the stimulation of exercise, specifically yoga, that is my main focus of my degree. And so I wanted to understand, like, why is it that we feel so good after yoga? Why is it that, you know, people who practice yoga, you know, have a lower body mass index or have more self-control or all these other things that we've been able to see in the research? So when we talk about cancer, we want to look at how we can prevent cancer. What can we do when a patient's going through treatment? And then how can we aid with survivorship? And so with the prevention of cancer, we really want to, the data that we have right now is really looking at some of these physical activity behaviors. We don't know a lot about why it is that the people who are more physically active tend to have less of occurrence of cancer. There's been some really fascinating studies on this, specifically the Nurses' Health Study and the LACE and Collaborative Women's Longevity Study, where they looked at the reduction of all-cause mortality with physical activity. And this is certain types of cancer, specifically like breast, colorectal, ovarian. And some of the reasons why they think that physical activity helps is that It lessens the body mass index. It's also could be related to other health behaviors. But that yoga, being yoga is a physical activity, that it, we could potentially say that someone who's doing yoga or who's physically active 150 minutes a week at a moderate level, which you can look at heart rate or other parameters for defining moderate, that they then have less of a chance of an occurrence. But it's so vague right now, all the information that we have, because so much of it's just epidemiological data, and it's not, there's just no way of us knowing what prevents this disease. But in terms of treatment, which is where I entered the conversation with using yoga, so yoga can help with a lot of the treatment-related side effects or some of the other issues that can occur during the treatment of cancer. So many patients are, their level of physical activity drops significantly as soon as they begin to go through treatment. Some of that's that there's fatigue. Some of it is just the actual treatments that make it really hard for them to stay active, or that it's even contraindicated for them to active, like as if they're for instance, if they're having surgery. And then we have, what's occurring in like longer term treatments like chemotherapy or radiation, and how yoga can be this wonderful way for people to stay active during the course of their treatment. And then during the survivorship, that how we can help them with returning to activity, to lessening some of the fragility or the, developing more confidence to being active, and to face some of the treatment related side effects that are residual. And yoga is a wonderful way of them to transition from sedentary behavior that's occurring when they're going through treatment, if it is, and then back to their daily life, and that then they can move back into a full, diverse level of physical activity that they need to do for their life.
Yeah, that's so incredible to hear, because you hear so many like tragic stories around cancer, and it seems to be one of the main things that sort of causes people to end their lives lately. And do you find that it's more in your research that it's more like pain relief that it helps with, or is it actually like having a deeper impact to sort of like cure symptoms?
Well, specifically in terms of how we're talking about yoga, and we also want to be really careful about using the word cure, and just to help out with the clarification of it, because we have to be really careful about how we talk about things.
So I that we're specific. Said it, and I felt like it wasn't the right word, but it was already out.
I understand. This population is really, first of all, cancer is such a complicated, disease, and no cancer is the same. And I shouldn't say that, but, cancers are very diverse depending on, where they're located and what's occurring specifically for that person, what age that person is, and what physical status they are when they develop the diagnosis and all of that. One of the big problems that need to be solved is that we need to help these patients, get through with as much of their own resources as possible. So that might be to retain as much physical activity as possible during the treatment, as much as is realistic and really appropriate for that individual. And then there's also so many of the treatment related side effects that, that occur, and that they can be lessened by complementary, therapies such as cancer or even, such as yoga and, acupuncture or, massage and all these other techniques. And exercise in general also, or rehab, medicine, physical therapy is so important for helping with the patient returning to their physical activity. So we want to think about like what are some of the main challenges that this population faces, and some of that is to return to activity and to then have the most amount of physical activity is available to them as possible as they continue with their life.
Yeah. Wow. That's just, it's amazing that you're a part of that and that you're doing that and encouraging people who are really suffering to be moving their bodies again.
So my personal research, as I'm moving from being a master's student into the next level of my program. So the current, the studies that I was a part of, it was kind of like the way I think of it is like I was part of this like giant ship and I got to write the yoga interventions and be like a consultant to these brilliant oncologists and then, you know, give recommendations for our program manager of how we should, you know, use yoga and within all these different populations in our program. And then, you know, it was kind of like being part of like a giant operation with lots of funding. And now moving into being a student and working on a couple of studies I'm working in a couple of PhD student with a couple of PhD students this summer, and then working towards my own research and my own questions. I'm interested in continuing to look at this population of cancer patients after treatment and before their 5-year survivorship benchmark. And because it's really a fertile time for them to develop physical activity behaviors again. And the goal is really to promote long-term adherence to unsupervised physical activity behaviors. And then there's, you know, the interest of yoga being helping to mediate the relationship between the intention to be physically active and then to be actually physically active. And so much of the recommendations that are given, if there is any recommendation at all for patients to return to activity, is, you know, treadmill, because we have a lot of research that's been done using cardiovascular exercise. And now we have this emerging research in the last 10 years of looking at resistance training and whether or not that's, you know, the best tool for the job. And really a combination of these multimodal programs are really important. But I see yoga as having a high potential because it helps with really, you know, the people who need to move from sedentary behavior back into physical activity. And the yoga practice itself has, you know, we move slow enough usually, you know, in like a gentle yoga class where then it facilitates this individual's ability to listen to their body and to understand their parameters. There's a feeling that most patients have after they've gone through treatment, and there's a lot of barriers, and yoga can be a great facilitator to move towards exercise and activity. And the feeling is that the patient feels like they're on their own. They've been discharged from physical therapy or from their oncology office, and they used to see that person every week or maybe even every day. And then it's like, well, you're surviving this disease and you got to move on and do the best you can. And so this is where, you know, people who are interested in teaching this population will be really, I think, effective. And then there's also the feeling that this population has where they have sort of a like a disruption of their identity, a heightened vigilance and self-awareness. There's a lot of uncertainty, and they sometimes lack the confidence to be physically active. And this is where, you know, gentle yoga can be really helpful for helping this person move from sedentary behavior to activity. And then there's the patient becomes acclimatized to being fatigued, or they get used to, you know, it's like, it's really hard. I don't know if you've ever gone through any periods of time where you've been sedentary or you're recovering from something where it's like, you have to mobilize yourself and you have to move past like this feeling of all you want to do is just sit on the couch and like eat ice cream, you know, those types of the, you know, maybe some of us who haven't faced, you know, such a life-threatening disease like cancer, you know, can maybe relate to, is like those times where you just have to push yourself to do it, to get more active, even though some of the signals that you get from yourself is that all you want to do is just rest. Yeah. And this, yeah, these are like the residual side effects, and there's actually like impairments of actual, a loss of substantial muscle strength and cardiovascular fitness and how exercise is really the best way. And yoga, I think, is a wonderful is a wonderful form of exercise to help these people make that adjustment from their current level of ability to then, you know, to an activity behavior that is going to help them with, you know, just help facilitate their body towards healing and health.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's really inspiring to listen to that. It's just like, you know, I've never been seriously injured or sick, but I can definitely relate to the times where it's like, oh, I should go do some exercise. Like, I don't feel like it. I'd rather just like lie around. And it's rare that it happens now, but I know it happened a lot in my early 20s and late teens and that sort of thing during college and whatnot. But it's like, you know, when you have that ability to move your body because you are healthy,
yeah,
you really should be taking advantage of it. But if you have nothing to compare to as to feeling bad in your body, then, you know, it's hard to put that into perspective. But it's cool to hear.
Yeah, it's my philosophy that I believe that there are certain times in our life where we really need the outside objective eye for our own movement. And those are times when we've had abrupt changes, and that might be coming from a disease or from a surgery, where we lack our own proprioception and our own ability to kind of like understand where we are in space, or even what our level of physical activity is. So, you know, that's such a challenge. Pregnancy, I think, is another time that people really need help with getting back to physical activity. They're exhausted. There's all sorts of other things that are going on hormonally and whatnot of, you know, what they've gone through, and also the drastic change of, you know, of what their body's been through. And so as yoga teachers, one of the things that I teach in one of the trainings, in Japan is, you know, what's our role and our purpose as yoga teachers? And that I believe it's to facilitate an experience where students can get the feedback, the subjective information from themselves to be able to check in with like how their arms moving, hands moving, and all that type of information that we gather in our yoga practice. And then as teachers, it's important for us to have that hawk eye, that keen observation skill, where we can also give feedback to our student of noticing the shoulders rising up a little bit more, or I'm noticing that you're getting stronger, and be able to give them like some clear feedback of like what you're seeing and how you're observing it, as opposed to just, you know, stating like placating responses of like, you're doing great. Yeah. But really like, I'm seeing this change, like this is what I'm observing. And to be able to be that outside eye to this individual, and whether it be like on a physical level, or even sometimes like an affect where their mood is changing, or, you know, it's so important for us as yoga teachers to know, you know, how can we be of use to our populations?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm curious about what sort of like challenges you've experienced teaching in the area of cancer population versus like the general population.
The biggest, you know, there was a couple of other yoga teachers that, you know, I worked with in the inpatient setting, and it was, I think the one of the things that we used to talk about was how we needed to measure our success as teachers differently. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wonder how this would be such a great question for just the population in general. Like, how do you measure your success as a yoga teacher? You know, what, at the end of your class, is it that you got the compliment that was like the hardest class ever? Or is it, I mean, I hear that a lot. And then, you know, I'm also in an environment that really, you know, I teach also at a very active, very high profile sports gym as well, where I work with, you know, the very healthy population. And that's oftentimes, you know, the goal is, you know, did you give them the hardest class they've ever taken? But, you know, I wonder like how people equate what is success as a yoga teacher. And so working with this population, I would change what that would mean, from patient to patient. And I had the great privilege of having access to patient notes. And so I would be able to see what's going on with that patient. I also had enough training from some of the oncology nurses about understanding what the blood levels meant and also the different medications and a lot of the people that I shadowed and part of how I was onboarded to take on that role, because it wasn't just me stepping in as a yoga teacher. There was a whole lot involved in my own training and then also what they required from me, especially then to manage the program. But you know, each patient I would go in, it's like someone suffering from mucosis, which is an inflammation of the digestive tract, for instance, and tremendous amount of pain, that if I was able to get them to have an experience that was not of their pain for even just a moment, I considered that success.
Wow.
And to distract them, like basically healthy distractions, where so much of the yoga cueing that I hear in the common population environment, like what I call the normals, you know, people healthy and capable and able, like able-bodied, that it's about being present to sensation. But with the population that's going through a tremendous amount of sensation, it's important for them to have healthy ways of distracting their mind from being aware of those sensations. So it's about understanding which sensations they can pay attention to. So helping, like I'll never forget this one patient that I had that had two different brain tumors not related. And she told me that she had lost the experience of even understanding the sensation of chewing.
Wow.
Like she had lost certain like feeling mechanisms for herself. She's like, you don't even know what it's like to lose those things that you never even knew you could lose. And so when working with her, she's fascinating, very motivated individual and had a very physically active life. And it was, you know, she wrote me a thank you note after our session. She even took the effort to mail it, have it mailed to me at my office. And it said that she had thanked me for helping her find the thread to her breath as a way of connecting to her yoga. And so I always looked at each patient as where is movement capable? Like, where are they capable of movement? Is it in the mind? If it's, you know, if it's not in the body, if it's not in the body, then is it in the breath? Like, where is that point of access? And I also really loved that my role was going in and working with what was working with people and facilitating almost like a celebration for them and a reminder that this part of them was healthy. This part of them was growing. This part of them they could hold on to as a sense of self and that they could also continue to mobilize it. So, and I still work with a lot of, you know, patients, even while I'm going to school in my private practice. And I work with very complicated cases sometimes where it's about getting those parts that are healthy, that are capable to, pull basically the other parts back to health is how I see it. It's, you know, you can look at it from the mechanisms of the physiology of the immune system or the nervous system and all these ways that we could, you know, we could describe it on an anatomical level. But, you know, yoga can give someone who's injured a way to be mobile that they wouldn't normally have, if they were doing like something they like their favorite sport, for instance, but they can still, there's always possibility.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so incredible. And I want to be mindful of your time. I know you need to get going. I wish we could talk all day. I feel like you have so many interesting things to share, but I do really appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast and share your wealth of knowledge and all your stories and your background and stuff with listeners.
Amanda, it's really great. I appreciate you taking the time also to meet with me today. And yeah, there's a lot. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast with you, even though I know that we didn't talk too much about the business.
That's okay.
Which we can maybe do that next time, because there's a lot to, you know, to talk about how, you know, the business of setting up a program like this and There's a lot of different program models out there. And I just want to encourage, I think, the community that is listening to this podcast, that it's such a valuable thing that we offer. And we can get kind of bogged down by how popular it is, or, you know, all these ways that, like, it's just like sort of gotten so commercial. But still, there's so many people who, I think, benefit substantially from our work, and that I think that it helps with facilitating. I really believe that, like, the work that I'm a part of is helping people to prevent their own diseases, and those who are facing or managing diseases, that it helps them to have a better quality of life. And that is so important. And I really hope that the yoga community can just know that we do have this possibility in the work that we do, and that we're giving our students so much.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good reminder for all the yoga teachers out there. And if anyone wants to learn more about you, do you have a website or somewhere where people can find you?
Not really.
Okay. Well, that's okay.
I really don't. I am like the hidden yogi in New York. I teach a lot of classes. I'm kind of crazy that way. I've just always have done that, and I love it. And people can, you know, come and take a class. But I would probably put up more soon. I've been approached to write a book, and most of my trainings take place in Japan. And I occasionally teach a module in certain teacher trainings called The Science of Yoga. And I love that because it's kind of a round table. I give, you know, information, and then we talk about it. And it's a really great module. I do have a shell of a website. And then I have a personal Facebook page that people can, definitely reach out and ask me questions. And I really, value being able to be a resource to people who are maybe working with this population and need some advice. And then also to direct them to the people who maybe could give them, like, more specific medical advice if needed.
Amazing. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks. You too, Amanda.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
Hopefully everyone enjoyed that episode with Lara Benousis. I know it's a little bit different from some of the other episodes we've done where we really focus on the business tips and tricks, but I think that Lara just has such a fascinating background, and it's so interesting to hear from somebody who teaches yoga to the cancer population, because I've never really encountered a teacher who does that. So really, really interesting. If you want to find out more about Lara, you can find the link for her website on the show notes at www.mbomyoga.com. You can also sign up for the newsletter there and check out all the new posts up on the blog. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please feel free to send me an email at info@mbomyoga.com. As always, thanks so much for listening, and namaste. Bye for now.